collection of the songs that were led, particularly that last one. And also appreciate the prayer that Dustin prayed as he reflected on our need to shine his lights and be a good influence to those around us. All of that going along with what we'll be talking about tonight. But before we get into the lesson, if I can take just a moment, it was announced about the study over at UAH this coming Thursday. I'd encourage you to go and support that if you can. There are a couple of opportunities coming up this week that I'd like you to make you aware of. Tomorrow night is our study at Athens State, 7 o'clock in the second floor of the classroom building there. We're talking about the battle belongs to the Lord and how to encourage our faith by looking at how God helped people win victory in the Bible. So I think Cameron will be leading that study tomorrow night, looking forward to that. And then every Tuesday night through the month of February, there's going to be a study at the Health and Science Building at Calhoun Community College. I've been asked to speak on the first two Thursday nights, and then Doy Moyer will be coming up and speaking on the last two Thursday nights. The subject matter is our reasons for believing in God, Jesus as the Son of God, and the Bible. So my assigned topic for Tuesday night is to talk about how Bible prophecy, fulfilled prophecy, demonstrates that the Bible is from God. So all four of those studies I think would be really good, especially for younger adults, college age, a little older, a little younger, something like that. Be especially good for you, but anybody is welcome to attend any and all of those studies. If you have the time and the inclination, I would encourage you to do that. Your reputation is valuable and important. Your influence is valuable and important. The scriptures teach that your name, your reputation, what people think of you, is as precious as ointment and great riches. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death better than the day of one's birth. And Proverbs 22 and verse 1, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver or gold. It's valuable to be well thought of. It's valuable for a lot of reasons. Not only is your credit rating higher, but also a number of other reasons, spiritual reasons, come into that. Why it's valuable and important to have a good name. From the standpoint of serving Jesus, of being a disciple of His, to have a good name, to have a good reputation, is, as the song we just sang indicated, a reflection of Him. We strive to be good because He is good. We are reflectors of His light. We are those who draw others to Him through us. That's the biblical concept of the good name and the influence that comes from a good name. And so Jesus Himself certainly said in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth. If the salt has lost its flavor, how will it be salted? It's been good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden underfoot of men. But you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel or a basket, but on a lampstand, and it shines to all that are in the house. Even so, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." What is Jesus telling us in those passages? Is He not saying to us, you are salt, salt? Salt changes things. Everything it comes in contact with, it influences the entirety of it. Light changes our perception of everything. Without it, we can't see where we're going. Without it, we can't see what is. Without it, we don't know what's true and what's real. We are salt and we are light. And both of those metaphors have implications for the idea of influence. Your influence then is as fundamental and as valuable as salt and light. But what happens when the salt loses its flavor? Jesus said it in more than one passage. He says it there in Matthew 5. He says it also in Luke chapter 14. You know what he says? It's good for nothing. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be a good for nothing disciple. I want to be somebody who is doing what the Lord wants me to do. I know you do too. We want to be able to influence others for good and to bring others to Christ through that good influence. With that said, there are a number of ways that salt can lose its savor, its flavor. There are a number of ways that we can hide our lights, put them under a basket so that people can't see. And most of those ways involve very common sins. Sins that can creep up on us. Sometimes some of these that we'll be talking about, we may not even realize we're doing these things. But they cast a pale on our influence. They limit us. They put a basket on our light, and they make the salt lose its flavor. So tonight, the title of the lesson might seem a little strange. It's not really obviously something that we want to learn how to do, but it is something that we want to know how it is that we can avoid doing it, and that is to ruin our influence. I'm just going to suggest and show to you in Scripture a number of different, pretty common sins that often beset us that can easily harm or entirely ruin our ability to be salt and light. We can ruin our influence by being inconsistent. If I were to ask you, without looking at this lesson, knowing what I'm talking about tonight, just went up to you on the street or, you know, after services someday and said, what would you say when you talk to people in the world, or you ask people to come to church, you ask them to consider becoming a Christian, you know, whatever your approach is, what's the number one reason that you get for people just adamantly not being willing to study the Bible with you or to visit church with you or whatever it might be? I don't know what everybody's answer to that would be. But mine would be this. There are too many hypocrites in the church. And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I think if we ask to raise your hand, if you've ever heard that, we'd probably get just about every hand in the auditorium. What's that say? That says that inconsistency among Christians has ruined influence. You've put a stumbling block, not just ruined the influence, but you've literally put a stumbling block before people who otherwise might consider the truth, otherwise might consider changing their lives. If our words, first of all, are inconsistent with our deeds, people notice that. You're not hiding that from anybody. That's hypocrisy. There have been those who have sorely disappointed us with their inconsistency and how they apply one set of rules to themselves and their friends and another set of rules to everybody else. We saw, if you paid any attention to what's been going on in our national government for the last couple of weeks, we saw hypocrisy displayed in bright lights, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, as clearly as anything could ever be seen. We almost have grown to expect that from our politicians. But nobody ought to expect it of a Christian. It disgusts us when we see it in others, and frankly, if we ever see it in ourselves, it ought to disgust us. The Proverbs say in Proverbs 26 and verse 7 that the legs of the lame are not equal. So is a parable in the mouth of fools. To really get to the meaning of that, you have to consider how a couple of things. How the wise man in Proverbs uses the term fool. He doesn't mean somebody that can't think straight or somebody that has a low IQ. In Proverbs, a fool is somebody that is morally reprehensible. He does things that are foolish morally and an offense to God. So that's what a foolish person is. So you take a foolish person and you put a wise saying in his mouth, a parable. And it's compared to the legs of the lame. You know, like this. And a guy can't walk straight. He's got a wise, good parable thing that he says, but his life is a moral wreck. That's what's being described in that proverb. Such inconsistency and hypocrisy causes us not to listen to those people. It doesn't matter how good the parable is, how right it is, you're not going to accept that coming from somebody who is morally reprobate. If I act in that same way, I'm going to diminish my influence. Actions that are not consistent with our reputations. I use the word stink there. I chose that. At first I thought, well, that's kind of harsh to put on the screen in front of everybody. But it's what the Scripture really says. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 1. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. So you just, you know, as a Christian, ought to be somebody who is respected for wisdom and honor and righteousness. And you go out here and you act the fool, again, in a moral sense. And it stinks. It's like that sweet-smelling ointment that goes sour. It just really smells bad. That's how hypocrisy is. When our actions aren't consistent with our reputation. The world is always trying to catch those of us who profess Christianity in inconsistency. In fact, I think there are people in the world that just delight in this. That if they can point out how Christians are inconsistent in some one way or the other, or maybe they just think they are, and you know, they don't really understand truth or Bible principles and things, but they're able to point that out. That just gives people in the world a sense of glee. And so people like, for instance, let me give you some obvious examples. Joel Osteen has become a punchline for this very thing. Here's a man who claims to be a Christian, who won't preach against sin, who's a multi-gajillionaire, I guess, gets all kinds of money from folks, and you know, won't even preach the truth about something so basic as what sin is. It just says that. I don't preach about sin. It's not part of my ministry, is what he says. And made fun of from top to bottom all across the United States. Kanye West. Some of the older folks don't know who that is. It doesn't matter. Right? Putting himself out there as a born-again Christian. And he's recently had this big change in his life. And a lot of people look at that and say, wow, that's great to be a Christian like Kanye. And a lot of other people look at Kanye and say, you have got to be kidding. Really? That's what a Christian is? And we won't talk about all the things that could be pointed out in the man's life, but the point is, you just see this all over society. Anytime anybody claims to be a Christian and some hypocrisy or flaw can, which sometimes in these cases is just glaring. We talked about, you know, the problem of the attitude of heart that would cause one to adorn themselves in the attire of a harlot. Carrie Underwood, somebody's put out there is just, wow, what a Christian. Great. Sing songs about bashing the headlights out of her breakup boyfriend, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's a great Christian, that is. So, you see what I'm saying? Now, I'm not picking on those people necessarily. The world's picked on them enough. I don't have to do that. That's not my point there. Please understand. I'm not preaching against them. I'm preaching against us being like them, where we have glaring inconsistencies in our lives. You don't think the world sees that? And what do you think the world thinks when they see it? when we are materialistic, when we are immoral in our speech, when we are ungodly in our dress. Those are the three examples. If you don't get it, those are the three examples I just used. What do you think the world thinks of us? It stinks. That's what. It stinks. Along the same lines, showing partiality is not good. Being inconsistent, being selfish, being partial in applying justice. Again, we apply this rule to me and my family and my friends. Doesn't really apply to us, but everybody else it applies to, you know, that sort of thing. Romans chapter 2 and verse 1, "You're inexcusable, O man, whoever you are that judge. For in whatever you judge another, you condemn yourself, for you practice the same thing." Paul says in chapter 2 and verse 21, "You who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal?" So I was in Walmart yesterday doing some grocery shopping. Sandy's not able to get out a lot, so I do the grocery shopping pretty occasionally. And I got to know where everything is in Walmart, which is a big plus to my total knowledge that I have. but in any case, I was doing the self-checkout at Walmart and thought I got it all, you know, and the little machine tells you, check your basket. And I thought I checked my basket, but I went outside, you know, and there's the guy that's, if you've been to Walmart, the guy that sits there in the wheelchair and he greets everybody with a loud voice and all that sort of thing. And I waved him as I went out and got outside and unloaded my buggy. And down in the bottom of the buggy, there was this can of tuna that I'd snuck out with that I hadn't checked my basket with. And so, you know, what am I going to do? Well, I go back in and I pay $1.79 for my can of tuna. That's what I do. And then I go to the guy that's in the wheelchair there, that's the greeter, and I tell him, "I snuck this by you, man." And he said, "What? You snuck this by me?" I said, "Well, it was an accident. It was at the bottom of my cart." And he said, "Oh, well, it happened." But I said, "I came back and paid for it." He said, "Well, that's good." Nobody would have known about that, I don't guess. I don't think they'd have got me on the camera, you know. I think most all of you in here would have done the same thing. That's what all of us need to be doing every day of our lives. And the thing about that is, about 2 days ago, I was in a conversation with somebody railing about how the reason we have to pay so much for what we pay for is because of so much theft, things that walk out the door of Walmart without being paid for. What kind of hypocrite would I have been? Let's apply the rules we apply to everybody else to ourselves. Let's do that. Showing partiality is not good. These things belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. Well, I've got a few more of these to go through. They won't take quite as long as that first one, I promise. But how to ruin your influence. Be unreliable. Just don't be dependable. When others give you a task or a job to do, don't do it. Don't do what you're told or expected to do. Don't be responsible. Don't do your duty regularly. Don't be trustworthy. Don't do what you say you're going to do. Or don't do it when you say you're going to do it. How do people respond to one who's unreliable? Well, they don't trust him. They don't trust him with much of anything. And if you can't trust anybody, if you can't trust somebody with something, you can't trust him with anything, is the reality. So here, you know, you're a Christian. You promised you're going to do something for somebody. You're going to meet them someplace at a certain time. Or you're going to take care of that situation. And you just don't do it. And that's kind of the way you operate. And then you want to come to somebody and talk to them about their soul and share them the truth of Scripture. They've learned not to trust you. They've learned not to trust you. They're not going to trust you. You want to lose your influence. Be unreliable. The Bible warns in Proverbs 25, verse 19, that confidence in a faithful man in time of trouble is like a bad or broken tooth and a foot out of joint. You ever sprain your foot? Get it kind of out of joint? Oh, that just hurts. Limp around on it for maybe weeks or months at a time before it ever gets better. You ever had a toothache that just wouldn't go away? That's a pain. That's a pain. If you're an unfaithful, unreliable person, you are a pain. You are a pain to those that have to deal with you, and they are sure not going to want to listen to you about what the truth of the gospel is. They're not going to want to follow you. Be unreliable. Don't do your duty. You remember, of course, what happened with John Mark when he left Paul and Barnabas on that missionary trip, and then he lost Paul's confidence. And I gather it took some good time for him to gain it back. Just because he quit, wouldn't follow through. How to ruin your influence? Be unfriendly. Friends and friendly people have a huge capacity to influence others for good and bad, but particularly think about how we can influence others for good. Again, the Proverbs tell us in 12 and verse 26 of that book, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. We are greatly influenced by our friends, and we can be led astray by bad company. But in Proverbs 27 and verse 17, the wise man says, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. If you're a friend, if you're a true friend of another and you are friendly to others, your impact on them will be that when they interact with you, the majority of the time, they're going to come away with a smile on their face. They're going to come away feeling good inside. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens, please notice that, the countenance of his friend. Countenance is the way you look. It's your facial expression, so to speak. Here's what psychologists have learned. The people that influence you the most are the people that make you feel good about yourself. Just think about that. If someone doesn't brighten your day, if every time you have an interaction with them, you all of a sudden you come away feeling depressed, or you feel like you've been belittled, or you feel like, you know, the world is coming to an end because this person is just filled with so much negativity, that's all they've shared with you, and you come away feeling just dark and horrible inside because of the interaction you've had with that person, you're not going to want to interact with them anymore. But the person that you interact with, where even though the world may be falling apart and you may be going through a difficult time or they're going through a difficult time, but you have an interaction with them and you feel better about everything when you walk away from that interaction, you're going to want to be around that person. I've gone into hospital rooms where people were literally lying on their deathbed, and I go to comfort them, and they comfort me more than I comfort them, and I'm praying to God as I leave there, please don't let me lose that person. Please don't take that person. Because of the good influence that they have on me. Be friendly. Encourage others. Lift others up. If they're down, if they've made mistakes, if they've sinned, help them out of it. Don't dog them. Don't get down on them. Don't be a hater. Love them. Be friendly. It makes such a difference. If you want to ruin your influence, be quick-tempered. The Bible warns us that losing our temper will result in losing our friends. Don't be hasty in your spirit to be angry. Anger rests in the bosom of fools, Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 9. Make no friendship with the angry man, Proverbs 22 and verse 24. With a furious man, do not go. Why is that? Why do we have these warnings? He that is soon angry deals foolishly. That's why, Proverbs 14, 17. People know that if you can't control your temper, you're going to make some horrible judgments morally. If you think back in your life at, as I've said this before, the top most embarrassing things you've ever done, if you had a list of 10 of them, most embarrassing things you've ever done or said in your life, probably a good half of them you were angry when you said or did them. Maybe all of them. You won't have to think very, very far back to remember one of those times. Nobody wants to follow the example of an angry person. A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The kind of words that we use, angry words, words that stir debate, words that throw gasoline on the fire that's already there, that's not helpful. It's not a positive influence. And related to that, how to ruin your influence, don't control your tongue. So we sang that song, which really deals with both of these points. You know, angry words, let them never from the tongue unbridled slip. Just, you get angry, you don't control your tongue. But other ways of not controlling our tongue are also problematic. Bragging. You enjoy being around a person that's always tooting his own horn? Nobody really does. Let another man praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips, Proverbs 27, 2. You enjoy being around someone who's always gossiping, always having a tale to tell on somebody about something that's going on, usually that's negative, that makes somebody look bad. Now, there are people that like to listen to gossip as long as, you know, they're not the subject of it. But you realize when you're listening to somebody tell that tale about somebody else, the same person that would do that would tell a tale about you and will. Where there's no wood, the fire goes out. And where there's no talebearer, strife ceases. As coals are to a burning fire and a wood fire, so is contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a talebearer are as wounds that go down in the innermost part of the belly. You've been on the receiving end of that last part. You have. I have too. Where somebody comes to you and says, do you know what so-and-so has said about you? And your heart just sinks. And maybe so-and-so did say it, maybe so-and-so didn't say it. But your heart just sinks. And you lose your influence. They lose their influence as a result. Don't be a bragger. Don't be a gossip. Don't be a complainer. Who likes to listen to somebody complain all the time? The Bible repeatedly says, do all things. Philippians 2:14, do all things without complaining. 1 Corinthians 10:10, don't be complainers, as were some of them, those people in the wilderness, when they constantly complain against God. You read those texts in the Old Testament when the Israelites complain, 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 and when you come to it after a little bit, if you're like me, you just get to where you roll your eyes. Come on, Israelites, quit complaining. Come on, Christians, quit complaining. If you want to be considered wise and spread righteous influence, control your tongue. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. Let your words be well chosen. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer. Think about what you're going to say before you say it. Don't just blurt anything that comes, you know, to your head. The mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Let your words be spoken with grace. Colossians 4 and verse 6. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man or each one. Seasoned with salt. After all, we are to be the salt of the earth. Lastly, we can ruin our influence by being unwilling to admit that we're wrong. The scriptures say it this way: the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. Again, that same definition of fool. Somebody who's morally off base. Somebody who's not thinking and doing right. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. We shift blame. It's as old as Adam and Eve, right? Well, I may have done something there, but it's really not my fault, you know. The woman you gave me. Well, it's really not my fault. The serpent tempted me. Well, it's really not my fault. After all, God, you put the tree in the garden. So we don't own up to our own shortcomings and transgressions. A wise man fears and departs from evil, but a foolish man rages on and is self-confident. Again, people in the world can spot that. They can spot arrogance. It's not all that hard to see. They can spot a person who's never willing to admit that they've made a mistake, that they've done something they shouldn't have done, that something was their fault. We are to be salt, and we are to be light. A number of years ago, there was a terrible train wreck where a train hit a truck that was on the tracks and carried it about 400 yards down the track. The man in the truck actually survived and lived to sue the railroad company, of course. That's the American way. And so at the trial, there was one of the railroad employees that was talking about slowing down the train. He was on the track, and you know, the lawyer asked him, "Well, what were you doing on the track?" He said, "Well, I had two lanterns, and I was waving the lanterns, you know, to get the train to slow down as it approached this truck that was stuck on the track." And so the trial was got over, and the railroad company got off, and the lawyer was talking to the railroad man about his testimony, and he said that was the clinching testimony right there. And the guy said, "Yeah, I'm just glad nobody asked me if the lanterns were lit." What's the point of that? Here we are waving our lanterns, you know, going through all of this effort, evangelize the lost, work in this community to bring people to Jesus. Are the lanterns lit? Because if the lanterns are dark, we're not helping anybody. We're not going to help anybody stop the train wreck of their lives. My life will touch a dozen lives before this day is done. Leave countless marks for good or ill ere sets the evening sun. This is the wish I should always wish, the prayer I should always pray. Lord, may my life help other lives it touches by the way. Let's be what Jesus wants us to be, salt of the earth and the light of the world. There's one here tonight, subject to the invitation of Jesus, ready to obey the gospel, or you're a Christian, you're in need to confess a sin publicly, or you have a problem you want us to pray about for you. Now's the time to come forward and let us know about that. We'd ask you to come while we stand and while we sing.